Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Thursday, 21 January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're chatting with Wayne McCurry. I want to touch on that Richemont, but also we've got MPC later today. After yesterday's inflation, I can't believe they're going to change rates. Isaac Odendahl from Old Mutual, is dollar weakness going to continue? And are we seeing a 2000-style bubble in tech stocks? And then Peter Sand on the surge in dry bulk shipping and container rates. Are we going to get an inflation risk coming through from those price increases? Yesterday's poll, we asked you about, are you buying local retailer rally? 9% said already in, 15% said most definitely. The majority, 76%, said not convinced. That ties in what Mia Kruger said. Also actually ties in what Wayne McCurry said last week when I chatted with him. Our market is not cheap. MoneyWeb Now brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable, income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Two forex trading companies go belly up, owing investors upwards of R1 billion. Folks, yeah, stay away from the forex scams and the bitcoins, and they're easy to spot. Too good to be true? It's not true. Business Day, China's big spenders put a shine on Richemont sales. I'm going to touch on that with Wayne in a moment. Was a good update from their morning markets. The US, very green, S&P up 1.4, NASDAQ up 2%. Asia green, Sydney and Tokyo both up 0.8. Commodities mixed, we've got oil a bit red, otherwise green with gold at 1871. Rand, 1487. Top 40 looking for an open of green, about 0.6% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Wayne McCurry. He's a senior portfolio manager, F&B Wealth and Investment. Wayne, morning. Appreciate the early morning time. We saw that Richemont update yesterday. It's 2 December, 3-month review. All round, pretty much a good set of numbers. We saw online much better, jewelry doing a heck lot better, double digits coming out of Asia and the Middle East, share moving to an all-time high, a solid trading update from Richemont. And I got to say, ahead of where I thought it would be sort of at this point.
Yeah, look, it was a very good trading update. And as you correctly said, it was jewelry that was good in online. Mm-hmm. Now, just to deviate slightly, you must remember last year could not have been better for online sales for virtually any company that has an online presence.
Yeah.
This year, or maybe not the first 6 months of this year, but at some stage in the next 2 years, you know, normal shopping will be back and online may even show negative growth rates and not positive growth rates simply because they've made such a big step up this year.
Yeah.
So, but coming back to Richemont, was very, very good. They got a good cash balance on there. Still suffering a bit in the Americas. That was still negative. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was the 3 months that was good. When you look at the longer term, you know, turnover is still down, but the share's been on a tear for a while now. It's gone up strongly for actually quite a sustained time period. And in our view, it's relatively expensive at this type of level.
Yeah, I got to be honest, I thought it was expensive 3 months ago, 2 months ago, back when it was sort of 120-odd, and closed yesterday just below 144. We also got inflation data out yesterday, the lowest 2020 inflation, with the lowest in my lifetime. You know, the previous lows were 3% in 1969 and 1.4 in 2004. We got MPC later. They are surely going to leave rates unchanged. They can't raise, and I don't see them. You know, 0.25% cut, I'm not sure that changes anything. So is it fair to say MPC, no change in repo?
I think so. We're still of the opinion that there could be another 0.25% cut at some stage this year, you know, maybe first 6 months. But as you said, another 0.25% will be by and large symbolic. They'll just be making a statement to the market. But within the inflation numbers, you've got to be very aware of food inflation.
Yes.
This has been around for a while now. I mean, some retailers are saying that, you know, they've had 14, 15% food inflation in the last 3 months. Now, of course, along with commodities, because you were discussing that earlier on, food inflation and commodities are heavily cyclical. So we're going through the upside of the cycle now, but more than likely within the next year or two, we'll experience the downside, because I mean, I cannot see commodity prices carrying on what they're doing now. In certain instances, the PGM metals, iron ore, this is as dramatic as what it was in 2008.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this doesn't happen. This is literally three or four standard deviation events. That doesn't continue. So more than likely, maybe in the second half of this year, we'll see some downward pressure on food and commodities. But of course, it will affect inflation, but I cannot see big movements through to consumer inflation, simply because the consumer can't absorb these big price increases either here or globally.
Yeah, so perhaps the squeeze actually happens at the retailer or the food producers. But you mentioned iron ore, $170. That is eye-watering. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, Kumba, Billiton, Anglo, they love it. But
fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not as sustainable.
Understand?
Price.
I mean, you saw Billiton's results yesterday. Record iron ore production in Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and every single iron ore producer is going to be pumping iron ore out at this price like there is no tomorrow. They're going to make hay while the sun shines. And believe me, they can up iron ore production relatively, you know, 6 months or so, you can get that iron ore production massively up at these sort of prices. And remember last time it hit, I think it only hit about 130, 140 in 2008. You know, the next stop, I think, was 22. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, because I cannot see a global economic crash happening, but understand this is a cycle.
Yeah, yeah. And cycles, and 170 has to be a top. Likely we're going to see some downside. When? We're not sure. But to your point, when the ducks are quacking, feed them, and the producers are absolutely doing
they
that.
Will.
Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager, F&B Wealth and Investment. Appreciate your early morning, sir.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place?
Offshore.
While earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP.
Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting with Isaac Ogendahl. He's an investment strategist at Old Mutual Wealth. Isaac, morning. Appreciate your time. A great note that came out from you and your team. Rather than predictions, which is the sort of trend we see around the January period, everyone trying to predict the future, you're saying, hang on, there's some questions here. And you got five of them. You won't touch on all of them. Time is tight. The first one I do want to touch on is dollar direction. We saw a weaker US dollar in 2020. Massive stimulus should weaken it further. Of course, stimulus could boost the US economy. So it's a bit touch and go whether it's going to be weaker in 21. Of course, it is. Yeah, the world kind of perhaps likes a weaker dollar and would like to see some weakness going through the rest of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the key issues, and it also speaks to the future of commodity prices that you spoke to with your previous guest. So yeah, and I do think you're going to have those two forces rubbing up against each other. You know, the US is printing more money or stimulating its economy more than other major countries, that will tend to put downward pressure on the dollar. But by the same token, you know, if that leads to a stronger relative U.S. Economy and then perhaps rising interest rates there, you know, that'll have the opposite effect. So I think those two forces probably pushing up against each other. And I wouldn't expect dramatic moves from the dollar in either way during the course of the year. But as things stand, the world is quite happy with the dollar being much weaker than it was a year or so ago.
Yeah, and as you say, it's weaker. We can probably quite like it if it just stays more or less where it is. The other is a bubble in stocks, particularly U.S. tech. And you make the point that the phrase "this time it's different" is very, very scary. But in truth is, valuations are at 2,000 levels, but it is different. These tech companies make profit, and truthfully, lots of profits. We've got low rates, which obviously helps into that. So that these tech counters are expensive. expensive, but perhaps they're not so much bubble expensive, because this time it's real deal in terms of 2000, which really, my sense back then, it was a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, look, I think there probably are elements of smoke and mirrors in some poor parts of the market, some penny stocks, and there's a bit of that kind of retail day trading element happening. But yeah, I mean, those big companies, they are printing money hand over fist. So you know, it is very different than we saw in the late 90s. And I think the interest rate story is also very important. You know, the U.S. bond yield was 6% in 2000 when the market.
Of course, yeah.
And now it's, you know, it's around 1%. And those low interest rates do kind of change, you know, the calculation on all stocks. And I think the other thing to remember is just that even though the big tech stocks are quite expensive, I think there are other areas in the overall U.S. market that are not. And those areas will benefit from a stronger economy, you know, as the vaccines roll out and as some of these stimulus measures start taking action. So yeah. not bearish on U.S. stocks, but I think the old lesson is just that when you have very high valuations, that tends to dampen your future returns. That's not a timing mechanism. It doesn't tell you when to get out the market. It just suggests that your longer-term returns are going to be disappointing relative to something that you buy at a more attractive valuation.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's always it's the price you pay informs that profit you're going to make down the line. Quick last question. Your last one is this the year when things finally get better? I mean, we're seeing second waves in the pandemic, but we're also seeing vaccines rolling out. Locally, of course, we've got challenges around Eskom and the like. There is a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of risks out there, but we're off a low base, and there's my sense is there's certainly some merit for perhaps the cliched sort of cautious optimism for 2021.
Yeah, I think certainly in the local scene, I think we are coming off an extremely low base, not just last year, but also sort of 4 or 5 years of disappointment year after year in terms of growth, in terms of equity market performance, in terms of fiscal policy. And I think a big kind of probably underappreciated boost that we're going to get from commodity prices, you know, that's already helped obviously the mining shares. But if you think about this, the feed through to higher tax revenue for the government, you know, that it could be the first time in probably 7 or 8 years that we actually have an upside surprise on tax revenue this year. And I think that'll definitely get a bit of a change the narrative on South Africa a little bit, you know, from the kind of the perennial underperformer and you know, that the only direction is down.
Yeah, yeah. That will, to your point, that will be huge. I mean, base effect and all, but just, you know, an upside effect on tax will be absolutely great. Isaac Odendaal, investment strategist, Old Mutual Wealth. Appreciate the early morning, sir.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Peter Sand. He's chief shipping analyst for BIMCO. And you're thinking, why am I talking shipping? Well, I've been hearing these reports repeatedly sort of during January about shipping rates going through the roof. I've chatted with one of the logistics CEOs locally. He didn't want to chat, but he confirmed it and said that they're struggling to find shipping containers at times, and certainly rates are up. Peter, really appreciate your time today. Reports I'm seeing say suggesting that dry bulk rates in January are amongst the highest in a decade. I mean, is this correct? And if it is, what's the driver behind it?
We're not talking about a decade high, no. But what we're seeing in dry bulk is a very strangely happening counter-seasonal jump in Capesize, which is basically really lifting the markets. And that is extraordinary. This is not something we see in January at all. So that is making headlines, I think, in many ways, as things really move in the complete opposite direction on what otherwise would be the case this time of the year. And obviously, there's an interesting story from Asia on coal and iron ore in that regard. So on container shipping, we are seeing what you also allude to is decade high numbers. More than that, this is all time high numbers where freight rates are seeing $8,000, $9,000, sometimes $12,000 per 40-foot container unit. So that's just mind blowing high.
Is it pandemic related? Perhaps. I mean, I was going to say containers could be stuck in some part of the world, but I'm imagining, you know, ships have largely been moving during the pandemic.
in terms of container shipping, this whole stop and then fast forward that we have seen in demand throughout 2020 have completely clogged up the normal logistics of moving containers around the globe in terms of loaded going one way and empties going back. So once that system of logistics basically broke down during Q2 of last year, that created the initial start of having boxes in the wrong place for the wrong period of time. So once that was reversed fully and then some, with demand more or less at an all-time high in Q4, in a COVID year, I mean, people have money to spend on goods when they do not spend them on services.
Yeah.
So that comeback have brought around all-time high spot rates on the Trans-Pacific, on everywhere, also from Far East into Europe, Far East to Durban, Joburg, Santos, wherever, simply due to massive demand instantly, and right now getting them as high as they are now due to a shortage of equipment, basically meaning that you really need to find heart to find an empty box if you want your cargo moved.
And is that something that it'll work its way through the system? I mean, you say that certainly the logistics channels are more or less flowing again now. I imagine we can bring perhaps more capacity on. I'm not sure how quickly that could happen. Is this something that'll work its way out in a couple of weeks or maybe months?
We suspect the whole first half of 2021 will be spent on repositioning empties, because one box leaving Far East today for Europe, for instance, will not be back until late March. So the fact that these metal boxes need time not only to move the loaded cargo and the payloads, but also to get repositioned back into the main export areas. It does take time, even though ships are doing whatever they can, and most available capacity is at sea right now doing its transport work. There is a squeeze on boxes, not on shipping capacity in terms of ships, but in terms of boxes. So this is driven by a bit of an equipment shortage, but I'm sure it's very welcome by an industry that have lost money basically for the past decade.
Yeah, they have had. I mean, we've got Grindrod Shipping down here in Durban, and of course they had a brilliant decade up to 2010, and well, they spun off their shipping division. That's how bad the decade subsequent to 2010 was. If we go back to dry bulk, is that what's causing that problem there? I mean, you know, you mentioned iron ore. Certainly, iron ore prices are at records, which in one sense means, you know, the suppliers are wanting to get stock out the door, but some of the buyers might be a little bit reticent at what, $170 a ton on some of the grades.
Yeah, but China is really running the show in dry bulk. Chinese imports account for 48.5% of the total market.
Wow!
So when the Chinese are importing, last year 9.5% up on iron ore imports in January, and they have money to spend on infrastructure, construction, housing, everything that requires steel. They are also scrambling to get the iron ore cargoes, which you rightly put yourself, the miners are eager to make the most of the high commodity prices. So that in combination with the cold spell that have seen also liquefied natural gas prices going sky high, but in terms of dry bulk, we're talking about coal, which has also been going down into China for most of 2020 until December, when that coal spell hit and they were still, I think it's fair to say, struggling with COVID related issues in their own mines. So they need to supply coal to the extent of 300 million tons on a yearly basis, and in December alone that brought 39 million into China.
Wow. Okay.
And that is brought also on capesizes into China. So this is very much driven by the large ships, whereas all other sectors from Panamax, Supermax, Handysize, they are more reacting to the normal season with slightly lower demand, but capesizes, that's red hot and currently sitting in some $24,000 a day. So So that's okay. Nice.
How many, I mean, my sense is, I mean, obviously, I mentioned up front, the logistics players are struggling in this environment. They're going to pass as much of that increases on to their users. In most cases, they can pass all of it on. The question, of course, can they find a box? I mean, that's a different story. Can they find a dry bulk? Is this a potential, I mean, even if it's only a two quarters or so, could this start to perhaps come up in inflation in some of the markets? I suppose that's going to depend what you're shipping, but, you know, the ripple through the economy if the price increases are large enough?
Yeah, I think that is a question that I've been asked a few times during the past months. So it's perfectly sane to try and set this into perspective. But I must also say that it would be unprecedented if we see a rippling effect of high container gotcha. Shipping rates onto the price tag of the goods that you and I purchase. It goes for the petrol price down at the pump, mm-hmm. or it goes for what's at store. In terms of everyday containerized commodities, it still represents a tiny, tiny proportion of the end price of the commodities. So I don't expect any inflationary pressure on the back of this.
Yeah. So the news here is really it's a good time to be a shipper. It's been a while since it's really been a good time, but this is definitely it. Peter Sand, Chief Shipping Analyst at BIMCO, really appreciate your time. This show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 29. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial services provider with license number 4050483. Paul, we're asking you, what do you think the MPC will do later today? Wayne McCurry says unchanged. I agree with unchanged. But do you think maybe they'll cut? Do you think they'll leave unchanged or will they rise the rates? You'll find that on our Twitter account at MoneyWeb. That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app at 6:30 a.m. Podcast available from 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early mornings. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.